Kia ora, tā lofa hai, and welcome to another episode of Tanarumanga's Team Talk, proudly sponsored by Victual, New Zealand's first health and wellbeing supplement range that combines ancient Māori and Pacifica wisdom and ingredients. And my guest tonight is an All Black great, Kevin Mealamu. Born in Tokoroa and a former student of Awarere College in South Auckland, he debuted for Auckland Rugby in 1999, and played 65 games. He played 164 games for the Blues between 2000 and 2015, becoming the first player to reach 150 games for one franchise and winning a Super Rugby title in 2003. He also had a little stint with the Chiefs in 2002, playing 11 games, and he debuted for the All Blacks in 2002 against Wales on the India Tour of Europe and went on to play 132 tests, winning back-to-back World Cups in 2011 and 2015, with the final being his last match in black. He was appointed a member of the New Zealand Order of Merit for services to rugby in 2016, and now he co-owns a gym with his wife, Latai, called Fit 60 in Takanini, and has moved into local body politics, having been elected onto the Papakura local board in 2019, and sits on the Auckland Rugby Board. And he's about to take on former NRL star Wairangi Kōpū in July's Celebrity Fight for Life event. Ooh, need a bit of a breath, Nils. such an honour to have you on my podcast. Also, I appreciate it as always, making time. How are you?
Thank you, T. I just want to say a big thank you for the opportunity. We were just talking about it previously, just about getting a chance to connect in again. So, thanks for having me on your podcast, but also giving me the opportunity to connect in again. It's been too long.
Oh, it has been. And now we have to talk about boxing. You're putting on the gloves for the first time, and he's talk about turning professional. And how's that going?
T, I understand it's going to be a short window, but it's actually something I'm. I've always had a passion for boxing and had an opportunity during my time while we were playing rugby. But, you know, like most things, I was pretty much focused on the rugby. It's hard to do anything else wholeheartedly when we get the chance to be able to play professionally. But it's a passion, T, and I've got an opportunity. I might have two opportunities to get in the ring this year, so.
Oh, that's awesome. And yes, I remember when we were training in our days together in the All Blacks, watching, you know, yourself and Rodney and, you know, joke around, but then also the joking became slapping, you know, with Mussy and Jerry. And then the jokes were, then it was, then I think it was, okay, stop, guys, stop now. Yeah. and you have, like, I know part of your gym, you know, at Fit 60, you know, you take a boxing class. Is that some of the training that kind of, you know, opens yourself up? Because it has been a long time since you stopped playing to, you know, now taking up boxing. Is that kind of what, you know, brought on these feelings that you want to get into the ring?
You know, when I think about, you know, been lucky enough to, with Latai, my wife, to be able to do this work in the fitness industry. But I think one of the things that really aligned with us is just being around people and being able to empower people, ourselves as well, and not only being able to, and, you know, we do quite a few different classes in there as well, and we call it Glover, which is our boxing class, but it's another opportunity to do something different. You know, we sort of know as well that the more variety you have to what you're doing, the more fun you have as well.
Mm.
And so I've been lucky enough to catch up with brother every most days, you know, and he loves his boxing as well. So we're always trying to keep our tools sharp. It's just an opportunity that's come around to you. And it's one of those things that, you know, one of the things we learn in rugby as well is that you don't want to die wondering.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I've been lucky enough to stay in good nick, which means I'm feeling really good for this opportunity, and something about challenges, you know, being able to step by myself. Like most of my work has been in team situations, So the real challenge will be doing this by myself. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, like I know exactly what you mean when you run onto the field and you've got 14 others around you, then, you know, if you do make a slight error or something, you've always got someone to back you up, or, you know, and everyone's in the same boat. But when you're out there by yourself, you know, I've seen, you know, as you have with other boxers, and, you know, like I said, when you're in there, you realise, oh, it's just me in the middle, and they all talk about it. There's no one else but yourself, so you can't. Yeah, you know, there's no excuses. You know, can't blame anyone other than yourself and the way you prepare. So,
yes.
Yeah, but that's why I loved team sports. Also. I was always looking to someone else to blame. Hey, was it your man or my man?
No, definitely. I was always, no, see, you know, I'll just, if you could just have a little opportunity as well. Like, you were definitely someone we would be looked up to. And I was really lucky to be able to, you know, my time when I came through as an All Black, to be able to have you, you're one of the first captains that I was lucky enough to play under. And you were always someone that you could always come down and talk to us. When I say come down to talk to us, I was still a newbie in the All Blacks, but you spoke to us like we were just, we had been there for a long time. And these are the conversations that as I got older as an All Black, wanted to try and do the same thing to you. So, big thank you to you, T, for being able to guide a lot of us young All Blacks in our time. And then we just wanted to carry on some of the good work you did as well.
Oh, no, I appreciate those kind words, Kevin. And it's quite funny, like, you know, my next question was, you know, being named in the All Blacks in 2002 for the end of year tour. How was that feeling, you know, when you were named, and, you know, what was happening around you at that time? Was, you know, you sitting with family or Latai, and, you know?
We were super excited. See, you know, it's something that as a youngster we dream big of one day being able to be an All Black. And we were lucky enough to just come off an EPC championship. And so we were celebrating that the whole team had gone over to Waiheke. And back in those days, I feel real old saying this, but we're listening to a transistor, a radio. So just amazing. We were under the marquee, and they had the radio going, and we listened on to the announcement over the radio. So there was a couple of us from the Auckland squad, and especially when you get a chance to look back and reflect as well. These are moments that it's awesome that we can share these with special people that have helped us along the journey as well, T.
Yeah, oh, exactly. And I have a vivid memory, you know, of that tour. It was in Wales too. You know, it was yourself and I think it was your shadow on that tour, Bradley Mika. And you know, I think I was, as an older statesman, you know, I hadn't talked to you in a while, but you said coming down the lift in the Marriott, and we got, we were going, because we were in the lift together. So, you know, I was chatting to you and just about how's it going, you know, what's been happening. And you didn't say much. Hey, that's what I remember. We're having just the giggling, you know. I could see you having a discussion. I think because one of the other coaches was in there with us. But that's what I remember. You know, we're all quite straight faced when we come. But as soon as we left, these two were giggling as she's walked out, as you do. You know, the merit that all the All Blacks stay at, you know, when they go over to Wales. But I just remember that because I think that was, you know, something, and to embrace those moments, you know, because it is fun. It's meant to be fun making the All Blacks. When you, even though it's a precious situation. You know, I always remember yourself, like, always, you know, you enjoyed yourself and what you did. You're very serious once we were out there, you know, like everyone was. But there were moments there where we could relax and have a laugh. You're very, very good with having those little giggles. And I think I just, and as we know, Bradley as well, you know, he enjoyed that stuff.
T, I think about it too, like, you know, things can happen really quick in rugby.
Mm.
And so, you know, the year before I was that year that I became an All Black, I was down playing at the Chiefs. I started playing for the Blues, and you know, I was small and I was on the bench for the first couple of years with the Blues, And I was like, I knew I took it for granted. And so when I missed out and went down to the Chiefs, I worked really hard down there. And by the end of the year, I was an All Black. So when I think about us, myself and Bradley in the lift with you, things happen really quickly. We were standing next to one of our idols. So when you're asking us questions, we're like, man, I can't believe that. He's our teammate now. So.
But that's on that too. That's such a reality in terms of, you know, like being in the Auckland environment, the Blues environment for so long. And as we both know now, you know, it's a tough environment to perform well because there's expectation, you know, of what's gone in the past, but also from our local public and media, you know, for we get these great kids coming straight out of schools, yet they're young and they need time to mature and grow up and understand the game, don't we? And sometimes we're going to select another one because you're not showing at a young age what we want. They have that same attitude, don't they? I've seen it in all the teams, you know, when they're not picked for their home franchise, they go out, go get picked up from another franchise and they have a great game. A great season why couldn't you do that here, you know? Is that kind of some of the feelings you have? You know, it just kind of pulls you into line?
Yeah, T, I can... And you know, we were lucky enough to play for a long time, so you see a lot of it. You see a lot of young talent. And I think that speaks to maturity as young people, a chance to move away from home, stand on your own two feet. There's that want or there's that like fire that's burning inside when you get a chance to every chance because you know, man, I'm not in the position where I was last year. And I'm usually here because I've missed out or something. I definitely saw a heaps, especially with a lot of Blues players. But you feel really proud of them when you see them come out the other side, better players, better people. And I think it's part of it's. Sometimes it's the rugby, the journey where you you know where you want to get to. You have sometimes have to go the long way there. You know.
Exactly.
Some of us are lucky to find the track there quicker, and there's some of us that have to go the long way to get to where we want to. So those are the learnings we can take into life, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's never just a straight line, is it? You know, from where you are to where where your goal is in life, and you know, I think it's the same that I'm finding, and I'm sure you were in business as well. You have this idea of where we should be going and you think, oh, yeah, I'll take these steps, but then all of a sudden it's like two steps forward, one step back, you know, because you just haven't gathered that information or I've got that experience, and that just comes with time. Yet because of the sport we play and the country that we live in, all this expectation is, oh, well, you should be there by tomorrow. And if you don't get there, then that's a failure, you know. And we don't give enough of these young guys enough chance to, oh, well, actually, they've got to find their way. Because as you said, like up here in Auckland, the simple things of actually living outside of home, you come home and, oh, no, you know, I still live at home. Mum still does my washing and cooks dinners and... you know, those simple things, eh? Like you said, when you just have to do that and fend for yourself.
I think too, T, and I had a good conversation with a good friend about it as well, was when you play professional rugby as well, success is often defined by championships and wins. But, you know, as you look at the journey that you go through as well, you can actually look at different ways to define what success looks like. Being able to, firstly, you look at just being able to be in the position, that's success in itself. You think about some of the moments along the journey. Like, it's funny, I know we are defined by, in professionalism, by wins and championships, but there's so much more to it. You realize this more when you finish playing rugby. You know, sometimes the medals fade and that, but the moments that it's actually the moments that we're in And, you know, I think about some of the World Cups that we were lucky enough to be in. The success is that you get a chance to do it and do it well with your teammates.
Mm.
So, I'm always big when we're talking to young rugby players. Just keep defining what success looks like to you. There's lots of wins along the way, even though sometimes it doesn't seem like that.
Yeah, and we need to celebrate those little wins too, I think. I know that's something that we discussed a lot, you know, in our time. You know, we're so, everything's about the win on the end of the, you know, on the sad day. And yet, you know, these little wins that you need to be celebrated, milestones along the way that we still need to remember, you know, for our players and our people that are involved, because those are important too. But again, no one defines, you know, the outside world doesn't define you by those. It's just about, you know, as you said, those successes on the weekend. And I think, like, in terms of, you know, you talked about that, the leadership, you know, you captained the Blues and the All Blacks. You know, what was that feeling like when I always get asked this question. So, you know, what was it like when you got were named to captain the All Blacks? You know, what was the reaction from your family?
I remember talking to my parents and having a chance to be able to share, even with Ty and my family, that I had the opportunity to captain the All Blacks. And I just think, like, the first part of the conversation is really quiet. realizing the opportunity, the magnitude of the opportunity. So the week's quite stressful, actually, to the I found it quite stressful. I was lucky enough to have really good leaders around us, around me during my time. But I don't know. And we always say, you know, the best thing to do is just do your job, go out there and play well. But easier said than done, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But just amazing moments. They're phone calls that you love to share with your loved ones.
Mm.
And thanks for bringing it up to you. It brings joy thinking about those moments. So, you know, they're awesome moments to share with my family.
I remember when I was captain, and you played so well against South Africa every time we played them. But my first time as captain, and we were down in Christchurch, you know, it was a tough game. And I think, you know, you must have said it to me a few times in Test rugby, you know, when it was, you know, in the tight games. And I'd come and talk to the forwards, boys, come on, let's go. We've got to get this. And you go, and you'd always come back, don't worry, T, we got you. Thank you. Hey, and you know, as a captain, to get something back, some feedback when you are trying to say something positive or get, you know, motivate the group, but just to have someone return fire and says, yep, we got you, it just makes you feel, oh, they're on, you know, like it's like, oh, that was for nothing, you know, that wasn't for nothing, and they're on board. You know what I mean? Is that how you find it?
I love that, T. I love when you're seeing, love seeing your teammates around you stepping up.
Mm.
And, we say captain, but and it's like the C that goes next to your name. But, you know, on the field, there's so many, there's some real key guys on there that are really going to help make sure that we play really well. So you pull those guys close, you have good conversations with them during the week so that you stay aligned throughout the week. And when you see things come to fruition, it's a sweet spot. It's a sweet spot, AT.
That's right. Like you say, you work so hard during the week, and then when you see it on the field, you know, exactly. There's nothing better feeling when you know you've put the work in and you're starting to see the fruition, you come to fruition on the, you know, again on the sad day. I'm just thinking, I love to watch you. Again, I was the older guy, you know, and your little 3-meter pick and goes that you and Richie used to always have at the end of training. I don't think anyone picked up on that, but I just used to sit and be amazed. I think you two and was it Rodney? I think you even had the props sometimes, but they couldn't, you know, 3-meter to do a pick and go try and use, how amazingly strong, you know, you, Richie, and Rod is getting under, but you especially, you know, it was like they'd light dive on you and then you'd just squat them back up, you know, as you got into bear crawl them across the line. I was like, that's a good drill. I don't know if anyone else could do that drill though.
It's little things, AT.
Oh, exactly.
And you're right, like, we just see, like, some of our teammates doing things, like, their routines, you know, and I always remember seeing, like, our kickers, and especially DC, when they'd, like, line up on the post and, like, doing banana kicks around, I'm just like, oh, amazing.
But again, like you said, it's that little preparation, just doing those little, the one percenters, as they say, you know, yes. And yeah, I just used to love sitting, because I was sitting down by then now, watching everyone do these. Come on, guys, all these work-ons. I'm cold. I need to go home. Oh, it's getting old. You know, we've talked, you won, as I said before, you won two World Cups and were selected in four. So I wanted to ask, what were the learnings that you took from 2003, you know, you know, you were the young man then up to 2007, where you're kind of still making your way to, you know, obviously the successes in 2011 and in 2015.
I think we, you know, I think about the two teams that we were in 2003 and 2007. You could look at them on paper and say, like, they were just as good as the ones 11 and 15. And there's so many things you get a chance to reflect back and look on. But I think one of the things that we worked on a lot on was just being able to, like, tournament rugby is different to playing World Cups are different to playing, like, you know how we play Tri Nations or Championship, where it's just how many points you have at the end of a competition, rather than quarterfinals means you go home, semifinals lose, go home. And, you know, so I think it's getting ourselves around what that pressure feels like and being able to handle that. I think it was something that we sort of picked up on in 2003 and 2007, was that possibly we didn't handle those moments as well as we could have. Because every time I look at those two teams, I'm just like, man, those teams were, like, packed with, like, amazing players. We had those are amazing teams. And I suppose going through to 2011, there were still quite a few guys that were a part of those teams. So it's not only one person taking an experience. There's coaches taking in that experience as well. And a good handful of players. So, I just think that those are moments, they hurt heaps. They stick around for a long time. So you got to learn from them. And sometimes it means you have to go into, you have to watch stuff that you've tried to bury away and not look at.
Yeah.
Those are where the real learnings are. So, ugly parts of looking at why we did things, we didn't do things well, and what happened, and then actually picking it apart and saying, okay, I understand this is maybe something that I'm not doing well, and how am I going to get better at doing it?
Yeah, look, I've been to a couple of World Cups. I've never had any success, so I haven't looked back at those because it does hurt.
It hurts. So there's heaps of things, but they're probably two of the ones that really stand up is just being able to look at pressure and how we handle that, and then, man, look at it like a privilege and say, man, this, how lucky are we to be able to do this? But then you carry it with looking at it a different lens with a different mindset.
And I was going to ask Brant, you know, in 2015, your last test as an All Black, you'd played over 100 tests. Was there any thought leading up to that test, and, you know, before retiring, you know, because you finished You didn't go overseas like there's the normal pathway for a rugby player. When did you decide that was it for me, you know, that I'm going to finish my time in New Zealand?
I think it might have been 2 years out where I had a chance to announce that this is when I'm going to be retiring, or might have been a year out. And I realised how lucky I was to be able to do that. You know, in most professional sports, we don't always have the luxury of doing that. Sometimes it's selection, sometimes it's injury, and things happen. So I think being able to announce that and say this is when I was going to finish, it gave me a real sense of peace because I just knew, all right, if this is the end day, then I'm going to chuck everything. I'll chuck the kitchen sink at whatever's left in the jersey. So I felt at peace. And it's always a challenge when I first started playing in my latter years from a different position.
Yes.
But the game changed. It became a game of every player needs to be ready to go and has to be on there, has to be able to do a heck of a job. Whereas when I first started, subs would only come on if there was injury. I knew what my role was. I knew what I had to do, and I could chuck everything into making sure that I could look back and say, well, there's nothing else I could do better. So,
And I think, about that transition from, you know, the loose forwards to hooker, I've asked others, but how is that when you first, you know, you're pushing on the side of the prop, then all of a sudden you're in between the props and have to put your head into a scrum for the first time? What was going through your mind?
I don't know what the heck was going through my mind. Like, I loved it, you know, as I learned the position. But the first year or two, I was switching in and out. I was still playing Lucy and going, we're starting games at hooker, and then they'll put me back onto the side of the scrum.
Yeah.
And but I'd be for the whole year of transition, I was just walking around like neck was so sore. I had a good mentor actually. And I think that's something maybe in rugby we just need to keep is just being able to, like, scrum coaches are really important for young rugby players. Because they can teach you stuff that probably like a normal coach couldn't teach you. The dark arts need to be
taught by someone that knows them.
So, I had a good mentor. He really, and bless his soul, he's not with us anymore, but Jeff was someone that helped me in my transition. And as I got to learn it, I learned to love it as well. Yes.
I was just going to mention your ears. Did you have those? Did you have those as a loose forward, or solely when you became a hooker?
I was so lucky. I was married. I was married with good ears, and then, you know, these happened after. So
they can tell a story. That's all you need to say. They tell a story. Another leading the haka. How did you prepare for that? Because it's a great honour, as I know. And yet, again, you know, as with captaincy, it's something that comes with a bit of expectation. And I know for myself, it was the only thing I thought about. I couldn't remember anything else during the preparation of that week. So, you know, you've led it numerous times, both huckers. And, you know, what was that like in the lead up to your very first time?
I feel exactly the same way you felt, too. Sometimes you're singing the anthem, but you know where your head is. Because it is a real privilege and honour, it's also a responsibility, which we're really lucky that we had the opportunity to be able to do this. But then I know part of us doing it well meant that our team was tight and our team felt great as we were about to start the game as well. So, you know, our hackers are always, everything's done with so much passion, but it's really sharp. Everything's done really sharp. So NFL, us as the Kaya is doing our job properly. That's what it looks like. Just looks like one big mass. And I still remember when you led us tea, and the first time we were lucky enough to do Kapa Opango. That's what it felt like. Just the energy was just popping out of us, out of our jersey, out of our skins. But we were just one. Our team, we just looked like one. So, I definitely loved the opportunities, but I was like you. As we were getting through preparations to get ready and do the anthems, my head was on, do a good job, do it well for the team.
And did you talk to anyone before the test around, I don't know, how you should lead it, or did you get any advice?
Oh, and I'd always, we were lucky enough to, like, Power was always with us.
Right.
And Hunger as well, Liam Messam as well. Mm. So Huddy and Liam, they were always around to be able to share their knowledge. And so just really lucky to have them in my corner in my time.
Very proud Māoris there.
Yes.
And I just wanted to, you know, I must say, you know, when we did do Kapa Opango for the first time, that was another test against South Africa where you stood up and carried us home. So I just wanted to say thank you for that. As we said before the game, if we do this, we can't lose. And I'm glad you kept that in mind. We all know from the earth, goodness grows. Victual, New Zealand's own health and wellbeing supplement range with native and Pacific ingredients. Visit victual.co.nz and take your first step to help your goodness grow. I just want to talk about the leadership group, you know, and I was there at the initial stages, yet you were there right from the start to, you know, in 2004 to 2015. And can you talk about the evolution of that in that time? You know, obviously people come and go, yet what was some of the key things that, you know, did you have in 2004? Did it sustain all the way through to 2015, or did you just keep changing it around or changing it up or adding and taking things out?
I think there was a big evolution over that time. Mm. And I think when I think back to 2004, a lot of the stuff that we were starting to implement, like most things, like it just, you need some time under the belt to be able to do it well.
Mm.
And when I think about 2004 as well, and it was probably that when you think about the insights of our coaches as well, like to be able to have some young players in their leadership group when they're older, some of the older players that have been in there a little bit longer were still leaders within the group, but having the coaches bring through these new leaders as well.
Mm.
So that, we know that's always a tough transition when there's times of change. Mm. So, firstly to our players that were in that part of that transition, you know, thank you for their support, and also our coaches for having the insight to be able to do something that was totally left field. But then, like most things, I think, more time in that position to be able to learn. And we, you know, we think about all the structures we have, all the different structures, all the mentoring and bringing new players through as well, us being at our best. They all done best when you've got time under the belt.
Mm.
So, you know, as I look at our getting through to 2015, there was actually a couple of us. There was still a handful of us that were there from that have been really part of the leadership for a long time. So I totally believe it when they say there are just some things you can't buy.
Yeah.
And that experience, being able to be in there and also bring new leaders through as they come through and show their maturity in their leadership as well. I can just, maybe if there was one thing I could just put to that, is just that time in the saddle, the learnings, how you get that across, how do we get our learnings across? Because all the leaders have different ways of doing that.
Mm.
And I think it's good because when you look at a team of sometimes which could be 40, you need to be able to have leaders that can talk to players because everyone hears things differently. So if it comes from, let's say if it came from me, sometimes we might need another leader like Richie to say it as well. And he might actually say it a different way, which captures other people as well.
Mm.
So, yeah, no, definitely time under the belt. And that alignment of leaders is always a great thing, being able to spend some time and make sure we're all on the same page.
Mm. You know, in terms of leadership, from those experiences, what are the key things, you know, that you've taken away that you use now, you know, in your roles outside of rugby, you know?
When I look at the work that I do at the moment, like it's all about people. That's probably the biggest thing we take out of leadership is how do we get everyone that we are working alongside or working with moving in the same direction. Mm. We come across a lot of people who are different to us and hear and see things and do things differently. But so how do we build a bridge that we can all walk over together? Mm. So whether that be through the language we talk or how we present things. That's probably one of the things I've learned in my time as a leader in rugby is just built up with so many different people who do things differently. But we don't work properly if we're not all working the same way and we're not aligned. So it's probably the most important one for me.
Mm.
I know there's other things around, there's always work ethic that we take out of. We know what sort of success comes from hard work. And we probably learned that from our parents as well. But definitely things around how we talk to people. Some people like it. You know, we had teammates that just like it. You just tell them straight and they love it. And then there's some of our teammates that we just have to be a little bit more, put an arm around them, support them through this, and they come out the other side of the woods even better.
Mm. 100%. We'll go back. You know, you've announced, as you said before, that you're going to retire. When did you start planning for life after, you know, once you retired? You know, because, again, you know, you've had you decided then that I'm going to finish here and that's it, hang those boots up for good. And what were you going to do after rugby? At what stage did you start planning that?
See, I think it might have been 2012.
Jeez.
I went and knocked on Steve's door on one of our tours we were on, and just said, I just put across to him, like, this is what I'm thinking.
Hmm.
Because at the last World Cup, I was 36. So, like, and I wasn't, you know, you never say that, oh, I'm going to be there. But it's good to, I think it was good to be able to air out, this is what I'm thinking of doing. Like, I know selections, it's not in my hands. It's just the way I've got to do my part, which is play well. But being able to air it out and say, this is what I'm looking to do. I want to be able to do some of the things we talked about in 2010, 2011 about great teams go back to back. And it would be amazing if I had the opportunity to do that.
Mm. And then, so you knock on Steve Hansen's door. And so from there, did you think about, you know, like, again, what were you going to do? You know, had that already formulated in your mind that I think I'm going to own a gym? Because you pretty much went straight into it, huh?
Yeah. Sorry, T, I probably didn't connect that probably, but because I knew I was going to finish in 2015, I actually thought, my mum wasn't, she was going, she had a little bit of illness, wasn't well.
Mm.
So I just knew, 2015 probably is best that if we were close.
Mm.
So I knew I was going to be finishing. So that's probably where the conversation was going.
Yeah.
I'd love to get to the next World Cup and that's going to be me. But then it also gave me an end point to start working towards. And there's heaps of opportunities that we get as rugby players.
Mm.
But when we thought about the gym, actually, it was something that's probably first thing is being a professional. We were in there more the time. Well, every day, you know?
Exactly. Oh, you were, eh?
Yeah. And I grew up on one. You know, my dad and my uncles had a gym when I grew up.
Yeah.
So in Tokoro, when we were little. But when you take away the fitness, it just comes down to it's about building that team up again, building a team around you first. And then, you know, it's about looking after people, looking after their well-being. And so I had a chance to be able to look. There were a couple of other opportunities, but at the time, as we were getting closer, moving into Fit 60 felt like the right one.
Mm. And how was that transition? You know, I've been to your gym, your great gym, you know, early on, but I see now that, you know, your membership looks like it's growing, and I think you're probably going to have to buy the rest of that all your neighbors next door because of how big you're getting. But at that initial stage, you know, what were some of the issues or, you know, like that you came up against that you struggled with because in this new world of business?
I think like most small businesses, there's things you just learn on the go.
Mm.
And probably as well because you go from being a professional rugby player into small business, there's probably one thing I could have probably done better, which I should have known, was have some mentors a lot as going into small business as well. I actually had some good friends and, you know, been good friends with Peter Thompson for a long time. But just I think when you leave rugby, you forget about these networks like we were talking about before we came on the podcast. So, you know, just maybe it's one of those things that we share with our young rugby players, just the networks that we have during our rugby time, to keep those the four networks, the friendships.
Mm.
And so just being able to have those conversations when you go through some sticky moments or you're unsure of things. We've got plenty of friends that are probably, they've already done some of the stuff that we're going through, right?
Yeah, and made some of those mistakes that you're probably on the way towards are.
Yes.
But we just need to ask. And I think, as you said, understand that they can help you because they're in that world. And professional sports, you know, sponsors, like, as you say, Peter Thompson from Barfield and Thompson, you know, they've been there, done that many times. Yes. And they're such good people too that they just want to help and see you succeed. And I think as I'm learning in the same, you know, like you don't realize how big your networks are, and that don't feel bad about just reaching out and asking for a bit of help, you know. And yeah, like as you said, sometimes you just don't even think about it.
There's a lot of structural stuff, I think, to being small business.
Mm.
Then there's stuff like identity, which is really important.
Mm.
Because you end up, let's say, for someone, like for both of us, we were probably in industries where there's so many different brands and stuff.
Yeah.
So identity is really important, that you look like you with so many others around.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And do things that represent you also.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. What's your point of difference, eh? Like you say, how can you make yourself stand out?
Yes.
And you've got to, yeah, it takes you a while to stand out. You know, we've been in a game where we're actually not meant to stand out. We're meant to stay together.
Yes.
Yet when you go into a small business,
yes,
it's like you're flipping, eh? It's, as I've come across, you've got to change the way you've thought for so long, being in a team environment. And I think it's similar to what you said about boxing, where it's just me out there now. Now I've got to do what's best for me, and it's only me. Everything relies on me. And I'm kind of getting that feeling similar to business. Like Fit 60, we know, is Kevin Mealamu's gym, you know, with his wife, Latai, and same thing with Victual, you know, with me. But that means I have to push myself out there. I don't know if I can do that. Feels different. But you've got to do what you've got to do. And it's just making sure you just get out. Again, it's just getting out of that comfort zone.
And even, you know, I think we probably talked about it like as All Blacks as well. You just talk about, do you want to be yourself, real self?
Mm.
It's the same too, I think, as we start going through our businesses as well. Like you start, the more you align to that, the easier, not the easier, it doesn't get any easier, but the identity becomes easier, right?
Yeah. I think that's really important, that exactly as you said, that identity. I haven't really thought about, and I actually just remember now people have mentioned it to me, you know, yeah. And it's got to come from your values and who you are too, doesn't it? Your identity has to be based around, it can't be made up. Like you say, real self, authenticity, authentic, that's the word. It's got to be real. Shh, wise man, you're a wise man. So, you know, now you always talked about business. Now I'm really interested to understand your standing on as a counsellor within Papakura. What brought that about? And is that something that you'd always aspired to? Had that there been a feeling about, you know, local politics and or was it just, oh, actually, now that you've been, you know, you're a great giver of your time and to your community, and was that just another part of that?
See, I came from a conversation with a good friend, then was just saying, as we spoke about what being a local board member looked like, it looked like an opportunity to be able to serve our community.
Mm.
And being on the local board in Papakura, like we live in Papakura, our business is in Papakura, Takanini. Mm. Our kids went to school up in Papakura as well. So then, so you start thinking it's an awesome way to not only be able to serve our community, but also see where the influencers go in the community as well. What are some of the things that we're trying to drive in our community? What does the future look like as well?
Yeah.
So it came from a conversation. And when people were talking to me about it, it was like, oh, you're a politician now. And I'm like, no, I never, not to say that politicians are bad, but I'm just saying like I never looked at it as being a politician.
Mm.
It was just a chance to be able to be in a position where I could just help and serve our community as well.
Oh, it's great. Instead of, you know, watching and sitting back, you're actually involved in shaping, you know, how Papakura grows, because it is a growing suburb. Like, I was just there in the weekend watching my niece play in a local league, under 16 league tournament. And I haven't been out there since my county's days, and just around Bruce Pullman Park. I can't believe all the
different,
all the housing, all the things that have gone up. But you're right, and actually being in a position to be able to shape how that grows and you know what happens within your community. You know, I think that's a great effort from yourself, and I know this, again, it comes with a bit of expectation and pressure, but at least you're making the decisions for the betterment of your community.
Yes, and T, it's what a year. Oh, sorry, what a term. Like, it's election year this year, but I can say half of the term has been over Zoom.
Oh.
So, it's a big part of it is being able to get out and meet our constituents, meet our residents. Mm. And we've still been able to get a lot of good work done, but there's nothing like the
face-to-face. Yeah.
Seeing how people actually feel when you can see the reactions.
In saying that too, so how were you able to deal with, you know, owning your own gym? Obviously, your gyms were hit very hard and during COVID. How did you deal with that, and how were you able to, you know, keep things going, you know?
So when there was an opportunity to train outside, it's in a car. And one of the things that me and Ty thought about straight away is, we don't want our members training in the car park. So let's bring them home. And so we were thinking, well, that means we can have some long nights. Sorry, we went online first, but when we had a chance to train outside, we just thought we've got a little bit of land, so why don't we make it into a cool experience for our members? And so we were doing it from home, which was great. Meant there was a lot of setup and a lot of pack down. But when we were talking about wanting to serve our people as well, we made sure we did that well for them, so that they could feel like they could get away from COVID for a bit. And so that, just the opportunity to be able to do that was awesome. And there were, obviously, like most businesses as well, there's challenges with vaccines and stuff, but we do our best to try and serve as everyone. That's what we've always been about, just trying to make sure we can look after everyone.
Yeah, I saw some of your trainees. There was some good ones jumping over logs, and you utilized your ability to adapt in COVID was great. I thought, oh, that's awesome. I was wondering, I said, oh, he's taking them all home.
A cool opportunity. I just we think about when we bought our place out here, it was probably meant to be,
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You're not too far.
Yeah.
From your local stomping grounds. Look, I know we've talked about talking about this. So I just want us to have a talk about our incident with our friend Brian O'Driscoll. I'd like to talk about just how did you feel when it happened? Obviously the incident's happened. I don't want to talk about that because it's happened, it's done.
Yeah.
But just all the backlash afterwards, and how did you cope with that, or how did you deal with that?
Tia, if I could say, having to deal with the incident, I think what I had to deal with was nothing with what you had. There's no comparison to what you had to deal with, Tia. And I always felt not lucky, but I was just lucky you were like a big bro, and always took most of the brunt. You always took that sort of spotlight away from me. So, thank you for always looking after me, T. but when I think about it, it's just amazing to think people think that there was a grudge, or we hold on to grudges like that.
Mm-hmm.
In a fast dynamic sport like that we play, things happen. We never play with the intent to hurt people, but things happen in sport. That's the sport that's part of the sport we do. But for years and years after that incident, to still see comments on social media, and I'm like, oh my goodness. I catching up with Brian. The last time I caught up with Brian, I hadn't seen him since the incident. We played against each other, but had never had a chance to chat to him about it. But when I retired, I was doing some work as a New Zealand rugby ambassador at the Hong Kong Sevens, and going to breakfast, and he was standing waiting for a table at the same time. And he met me with a smile, and we sat down together, had breakfast. He never mentioned anything. I never spoke about it either. But that's, I think we both knew it was just what happens in rugby. But I'd always be interested to hear what your side of the story is, what you've been thinking.
Similar. I get reminded about it all the time. I got questioned about it just yesterday, from someone. So, which kind of put it straight in my mind. Oh, actually, I'm going to catch up with Kiwi and see what he's been getting. And like yourself, we've caught up with Brian since then, and everything's great. Yeah, it does, as you said, people thinking that it's something that you know, that needs to be brought up every time, or there was preconceived, you know, ideas that were, you know, that about what we were going to do. But that's just the way it is, eh? Like, you know, I think it did get to me a little bit, you know, early on, you know, especially on that tour. It was tough. You know, the week after, it was like, oh, man, you know, you're just getting bombarded for questions and people and, you know, there's a lot of hate going on. And what I remember is our leadership group, like yourself and Richie, you're just really getting in behind around me and giving me a bit of support, you know, because around, you know, just what was happening in the media, obviously. And I think that's kind of what I remember the most, is just being well supported, you know, at that time. And and you know, we got what we got out of it. Yet now it doesn't happen often, eh? But it's always a good when you know the question's coming out. So I always like to say that. Yep, me and Brian, we share a good Guinness, and we had last time we caught up, we had nice dinner, you know, in Dublin. So I think everything's good now. You know, I think we can put it behind us. But yeah, I just thought, you know, us getting together, we never have really talked about it since we were in that room after the game. What's happening? Hey, what's happening?
It was definitely 3 or 4 nights of not sleeping because not sure what was happening. ET.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, hey, look, it's all part of history now, and some good stories have come out of it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, when I think about injuries too, T, the worst injury I've had was like I tore my pec in an All Black test, and it was Woody. It was Woody blowing. I was at a ruck. He blew someone out of the ruck.
Yeah,
he hit the back of my arm and blew my chest.
Mm.
So you just know it happens. It doesn't happen in the sport.
Yeah, that's right. We're such clumsy a dynamic people. Clumsy people. Oh, and you know what? In terms of being a board member too, on the Auckland Rugby, you know, what does that entail? You know, and I've been intrigued to know.
It's been a real privilege, actually. Think about it, and you know, the more time I spend in it, there's part of it which is that looks at high performance, T, and I'm on the RAG committee, so we're looking at our NPC teams, our women's and our women's teams, and our young academy players coming through as well. But the big part of it, I reckon, which is really important, is the connection back to our clubs.
Mm.
And how do we keep rugby something that still means something to people and to communities? You know, growing up, rugby was a big part of our community.
Mm.
And there's so many other sports now, which is great. But for me, there's something special about having strong rugby communities, different people working together, getting families down, families being at rugby games is always a huge part. Where it used to be the sisters waiting on the sideline watching the brothers, it's the other way now. It was great.
Yeah.
We're seeing our some awesome young female teams out there as well. But when I look at being a Auckland rugby director, a big part of it is looking at how we keep our game sustainable through our clubs and through our communities as well.
And it's a big job now, obviously, Auckland being, you know, the biggest city we have with, and, you know, the numbers for rugby men's is dwindling, isn't it? Yeah, women's is growing. So trying to, you know, and build up the men's game as much as we can in terms of the club game, and also make sure that the women's game flourishes and has the resources to make sure that it does that. That must be a key part of what you're doing now in terms of what, you know, like trying to build the game, like you say. You know, I'm a total believer in what you're saying, Gibby, and You know, we remember club rugby when we were, you know, it was community. Everyone went there. All the teams went back there. You could have a meal, you know, and you just knew, you know, whether you played in the seniors or in the under-19s or in the presidents, you knew everybody. You got, you know, different from different walks of life. That's changing, isn't it?
And see, it's probably as one thing you miss when, especially when you're a professional rugby player, but the backbone of our clubs, the volunteers, they are still the backbones of our club. And so with our world getting so much more busy these days, you know, we really see, you know, how much work that our volunteers have done and how much we treasure them. Because a lot of these people are not paid to do what they do.
No.
So we're so grateful for them. And then we're just, you know, how do we look after these people as well?
The 100%. 100%.
So many hours in a club. So.
Yeah. What are some of the skills that you've been able to carry from you know, what you've learned in rugby over into life after rugby, both, you know, and Fit 60 as well as, you know, your role as a counsellor and a board member? What are some of those transferable skills?
We talked about hard work. I think that's it goes both ways and is relatable in both worlds. I think about being able to be open-minded to learn and learning quickly. You know, we think about COVID as well. We're in a constant world of change. So adaptability, being able to adapt and do that well, is really important in the world we live in today. I think the importance of team, you know, especially in some of the roles that I'm lucky enough to be in, being able to have good teams that are aligned and working together and, you know, having good communication, these are things that help the wheels roll faster. I know they sound a bit cliche, but they're definitely things we learned in our sport and in high performance. Because we talk about it, communication on the field. It's as easy as it sounds. It's not that easy.
No.
And when we go into like private sector, or if we're talking about council as well, we want to be able to have the same. These things are really important. Clear and transparent conversations are really important. Alignment is really important, so that we're all working off the same song sheet. So they're probably ones that really stand out for me, T.
Yeah, those are really important, isn't it? The communication, like as you say, it's usually the first thing. What are the three key things we need this week, guys? If someone was just, communication.
And what is it?
Yeah, that's right. What does it sound like? Because I can't hear a lot of it.
We see it heaps, T. And, you know, communication is a skill set. Talking is one thing, but talking, being clear and detailed is another thing, you know. So, it's when we get down to the nuts and bolts of it, it's the same things we learned in rugby, like be clear, be precise. If it's someone you're talking to, know how they receive things well. Because if you talk to them in the wrong tone, then why not take that information?
Exactly. Health and well-being. So obviously you're a fit man. You've got boxing coming up. You've got a lot on your plate, you know, in terms of and you know, a lovely family to make sure you're looking after us. So how do you deal with all that? In terms of your well-being as well, what are some of the strategies you use?
I think COVID's given me a chance to reflect a little bit, T. You know, when everyone's in lockdown, and especially me as well, like you realise they almost times to reflect and say, and you realise how important the time with family is. So I think even now, I just sort of feel like there are moments where you just need but to do some self-care, which is really important. Brother Luke always spoke to me about it when I finished rugby. He just said, you got a lot on your plate and I can see you working hard, but you're going to miss the moments for self-care because you just fall over the edge.
Mm.
And that looks like different things, like just going for a walk with headphones on, or getting a chance to spend some time with Ty, you know, going for a coffee or something. They are important moments that just help fill a cup up again. Yeah. So that you can carry on in the busyness as well.
Mm.
But probably out of COVID, it just had a chance to reflect, and that's probably something that you just, we call it, you know, when we play rugby, we always do a review, mm. right? And so that's probably something, possibly when my weeks get busy, is the chance to reflect, which is probably what we do outside rugby. Go back and have a look at, okay, maybe I just need to take it easy, or need to put some more time on this side rather than this side. So,
yeah, well, you're totally right. And you say that review, that's exactly how I termed it when I was in terms of what you're saying there. I've got to do a review of what my week was like and look at did I achieve what I wanted to achieve, and and what I wrote down for my goals for the week. Did I achieve those? And, you know, and then you realize, well, where's the time for myself? Actually, everything's, you know, on the go, as you know. And when you work, when you're working for yourself, you know, you got to own your startup business. There's a lot of things you have to do, as well as wash the dishes and hang the washing out.
I totally agree to.
Oh. Hey, now the Women's World Cup. I just wanted to ask you, in terms of, you know, what do you think they need to do? It's been a tough few months for them recently, but they've got the World Cup, and how can we get in behind them? And what do you think they need to do, you know, to get the result that they're looking for? Because, you know, they're running short on time.
Maybe there was a couple. Now that you bring it up to you, maybe I had just like had some light bulb moments, but I just think back to 2011. There's and our experience are different, but maybe, yeah, it's something they could think about it. But it's just part of it, firstly, is connecting in with the people to say, it feels like we haven't seen them or been around them in a long time. So making those connections back into communities to say, this is coming up. We need you. We need your support. I also think like we haven't had a chance to have many games.
Yeah.
And that was that was the learnings from 2007. We had a conditioning window too.
Instead.
And I think that's pretty much where our women will be at the moment.
Mm.
They've been doing, you know, I think obviously they're getting through a bit of training, but there's nothing like game time. We learn situational awareness.
Yeah, 100%. Right?
So that's the part that they're going to be lacking, which is time on the field.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully, I think, you know, that they've got some games yet to be announced, but hopefully they do have those. And as you said, there's nothing like Test rugby, and we've seen them being out for so long, how they went over to Europe.
I was watching the Six Nations, the women's Six Nations, and the teams are really good.
Yeah.
And the games are tough. So that's what our girls are missing at the moment. Test match. Exactly. That sort of test match rugby. So it'd be great if they could get some games against Aussie, against Australia.
Mm.
Get them ready.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Hey, we wish all the woman the best for the World Cup. I know we'll be watching. You know, it's all up here in Auckland. There's no excuse for us not to go out.
Definitely. I'm there.
Nice. So, hey, I just appreciate your time. So, and it's been great to watch your journey and also life after rugby, inspiration to, you know, a lot of us, and what you're doing for your community. And for our rugby community as well, your local community and rugby community. So, stay lovely, bro, and we'll wish you all the best for the future. And you take care.
Thank you, T. Thank you for your leadership always.
Oh, lefaku.
Lefaku.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to check out Victual's website at www.victual.co.nz so you can rebalance your lifestyle with ancient wisdom and ingredients.